I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man, and I'm here to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Yes, boys and girls, it's Comic Weekly time, and here I come right into your house to bring a little fun and happiness right out of the pages of Puck the Comic Weekly straight into your living room, your friend the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. Well, little Miss Honey, how are you today?
Oh, I'm just fine, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fine, too.
You know something interesting?
I'm not sure that I do.
Well, I do. We have a little canary at our house, and I stuck my finger in the cage, and the canary bit me.
It did?
Yes. Can you imagine a little teeny-weeny canary biting a big, great, big person like me?
That is amazing. But I know something else that's kind of strange, too.
What?
Well, today, on the page which has Believe It or Not by Ripley, there's an interesting fact.
About a canary?
No, it's about a swallow and a butterfly.
Tell me about it.
Well, a man named David Thompson says he saw a butterfly that chased a swallow away.
You mean a little butterfly with its little spindly little legs and soft wings chased away a real-life swallow?
Yes. And you know, a swallow is a much larger bird than a canary. And it's a much, much bigger thing than a butterfly.
Yes, I'm really surprised at that.
I thought you would be. Well, you look at Believe It or Not by Ripley and see it for yourself.
I always look. I like Believe It or Not by Ripley. He tells very interesting things.
Yes, he does, doesn't he?
And there's lots more interesting things I'd like to find out about in the funnies.
Puck the Comic Weekly?
Yes.
Very well, I'll read them in just a moment. But before I do, let's listen to this nice man. Now, here we go with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on the first page, under Bringing Up Father, Beetle Bailey.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Toot me a toot and tweet me a tweedle. Squeeze out music for Bailey the Beetle. It's a rainy day at the Army post where Beetle finds most of his troubles. Beetle and a squad of men are busy cleaning up the grounds in a steady downpour of rain. Beetle's sergeant exclaims,
"Oh, what a headache. Hey, Beetle, run over to the dispensary and get me an aspirin."
"Yes, sir."
Beetle trudges over to the dispensary, the place where you can get aspirin tablets. He sees a sign tacked on the door. "Closed after 3 p.m. All cases will be treated at the hospital."
"Oh, rats. The hospital is 3 miles from here."
Third picture, Beetle, now soaking wet from the rain, approaches the hospital.
"Darn, I'm getting a blister on my foot."
Last picture, top row, Beetle enters the hospital and approaches the desk. A man carrying a stretcher knocks Beetle in the head with it.
"Ow!"
"Oops, I'm sorry, Mac."
Beetle stands groggily by the desk. But before he can ask for the aspirin, the girl there tells him,
Take that seat by the door and wait your turn."
Beetle goes over to the seat by the door, which is next to an open window. People come in, and people go out. And every time the door is opened, the wind blows through, creating a draft. And Beetle, who is soaking wet, gets chilled and begins to sneeze.
"It's you!"
Well, by now, Beetle is feeling pretty rotten. He's worn up from the 3-mile walk in the rain, his head aches from the hit in the head, and he's awfully cold from sitting in the draft. He leans back and puts his hand on the windowsill to steady himself.
"Oh!"
The receptionist hears Beetle's groan, and seeing him shivering, comes over to him.
I better close this window."
And she slams the window down on Beetle's hand.
"My hand.
Oh, just a minute. I'll open it so you can get your hand out."
And she opens the window. And Beetle bends over, holding his aching hand. Just then, the door behind him opens, knocking Beetle out of the window. And last picture, Beetle is in the hospital again, this time in bed. His leg is bandaged, hung on a stretcher. His hand is bandaged, and he's thoroughly sick. And the nurse is saying to the doctor,
"He said he just needed an aspirin."
And the doctor replies,
"Brave lad. Won't admit how bad off he is."
Oh, poor Beetle. All that trouble trouble just to get an aspirin tablet.
Yes, and now he's lying in the hospital all bandaged up. He really gets into trouble, doesn't he?
He really gets into trouble, doesn't he?
Yes. Well, now, what would you like to read next?
Oh, I meant to read Peter Pan because John and Michael are in Neverland, and they're going looking for the Indians.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, let's turn over the page, then. Go past Little Iodine. Oh, and look. Here on page 3 is Prince Val. And you remember last week, little Arn, who had been lost, was found by a woodcutter who lived in the forest.
Yes, does he take little Prince Arn home again?
Yes, he starts taking little Arn home. And Sir Gawain, who was looking for little Arn, meets them. And he takes Arn onto his horse and rides back to the castle to his father and mother.
Oh, I'm glad he's home safe and sound.
Yes, he is. Well, now let's turn over the page. And look, here on page 5, Peter Pan.
Oh, yes, Peter Pan, that cute little fellow who lives up in the strange land called Neverland.
Yes, Neverland, where little boys and girls never grow up. They just stay little boys and girls so they can keep playing all the time.
Hmm, that's fun. Well, that's what's happening today.
Well, today, John and Michael and all the other boys in Neverland are on their way searching for the Indian.
I wonder if they find them.
Well, let's read and find out right now. Here we go with Peter Pan. Say the magic words with me. Pirates, crocodiles, Peter Pie Pan. Whisk up music for Never Neverland. While Peter Pan and Wendy visit Mermaid Lagoon, John leads the lost boys in a search for the Indians of Neverland. Away they march, following John, their leader.
We're following the leader wherever he may go. We're after the Indians because he told us so. Oh, a deedle-deedle-dum, a deedle-deedle-dum. Hey, look!
Suddenly, last picture top row in a little grove of fir trees, John stops.
Hey, what is it? What is it, huh? What is it, huh? Well, look.
And John points at the ground with his umbrella.
Hey, footsteps.
Yes, Indian footsteps.
Hey, gee, what do you know about that Indian footstep? Yeah, Indian footsteps. Hey, look at that. What's that? Indian footsteps.
First picture bottom row, John says,
gentlemen, we must plan our strategy. The initial phase is an encircling maneuver.
And as John explains his plan of attack on the Indians, little Michael is the only one who sees the fir trees closing in.
Now, then we simply surround them and take them by surprise.
Little Michael sees the fir trees moving closer and closer around the boys. He exclaims,
hey, John, John!
But it's too late. Hands reach out from the fir trees, and the boys are captured by the Indians.
Me got 'em.
And John's plan for a surprise attack on the Indians turns out to be a real surprise on the boys. And last picture, the little hunters, now prisoners, are hauled toward the Indian camp.
Those Indians were hiding in the fir trees, and John, who was the leader, didn't see them.
No, he was so busy keeping his eyes on the ground, looking at the footsteps, that when he looked up, it was too late.
Oh, I wonder what the Indians will do to the boys. Tie them to the stake?
Well, that's something we'll have to find out next week. Now, let's turn over the page and see who's there.
Oh, look, my favorite, Donald Duck.
And we'll read your favorite right now. Here we go with Donald Duck. Say the magic words with me. Squeeze them, squiddly chicka chack. Let's have music to fit a quack quack. Donald gets a phone call from his girlfriend, Daisy.
Yes, hello.
Oh, Donald, I'm at Minnie's. Will you run over to my house and take my wash down? I think it's going to rain.
Oh. Well, okay.
A few minutes later, Donald is at Daisy's house taking her wash off the clothesline. There's a clap of thunder, and then it begins to rain.
Uh-oh.
Donald sweeps the last piece of clothing off the line, tosses it into a basket, picks up the basket.
I'll just make it to my place.
And he dashes for his house. Doesn't see a telephone pole which is running his way. At last picture top row, Donald picks himself up, starts tossing the scattered clothes back in the basket as the rain pours down, and then he dashes for his house again. Second picture bottom row, he stops on his doorstep. He searches in his pockets, and then he exclaims,
"Drat, my key, I've lost it."
He hears the phone ringing, so he dashes around the house. opens the window, climbs halfway through, picks up the receiver.
Hello?
O'Donnell, this is Daisy. I'm just calling to see if you got the wash in before it rains.
And last picture, Daisy hears...
Stop all the doggone stupid thing about your women!
What a temper.
Yes, what a temper.
Poor Donald. He tried so hard and he didn't get the clothes in out of the rain after all.
And after all the trouble he had, I don't blame him for losing his temper when Daisy called that second time.
No, I don't either.
Well, now look across the page. There on page 7 is Roy Rogers.
Oh, yes, Roy Rogers. You remember last week, Roy saved his friend Doleful Hawkins from being killed when the outlaws tied Doleful up and threw him in the wagon and they made the horses hitched to the wagon run away.
Yes, you see, the outlaws wanted to kill Doleful. But Roy rode up just in time and stopped the horses and saved Doleful's life in the nick of time.
And then little Tim, that's Doleful's nephew, who was riding Trigger, rode back to the outlaws, and now the outlaws have captured Tim again. And I can't understand why Tim had to go and get himself captured.
Well, he's a very strange little boy. He has some crazy idea in mind, I think. So let's read now and find out what happens next. Here we go with Roy Rogers, King of the Cowboys. Hi-yip-i-yo. Now here we go with Roy and Trigger. Hi-yip-i-yo. Tim has boldly galloped up to the outlaws and putting on an act begins to cry, saying that his uncle Doleful has been badly hurt. The outlaws had expected Doleful would be killed. They gallop back down the road in the direction Tim came from, taking Tim with them, now a prisoner. Bullwhip says,
I thought we took care of Doleful Hawkins when we spooked his ore wagon team toward Breakneck Curve.
Pharaoh, the leader, answers,
well, something must have gone wrong, Bullwhip.
At that moment, they gallop under an overhanging bluff. Suddenly, two figures leap from the bluff onto the outlaws.
Hey, look out there, will you?
It's Doleful who tackles Creaky, knocking him off his horse, and Roy, who drops between Pharaoh and Bullwhip, jerking them to the ground.
All right, now we'll take care of you, Pharaoh.
Roy quickly leaps to his feet and swings at Bullwhip.
All right.
Bullwhip goes reeling back, first pitch to bottom row. Pharaoh scrambles to his feet, whips out his gun.
All right, hold it, Rogers, or I'll blast you wide open.
Tim pulls out a water gun and squirts water in his eyes, spoiling his aim.
Sakes, my eyes!
With Bullwhip and Pharaoh out of the way, Roy runs after Creaky, who's knocked Doleful down. He whirls Creaky around and has the drop on him. All right, Creaky. The sheriff wants you and your pal Bullwhip for the murder of Doleful's boss. Last picture, Creaky stands, hands up, and says,
fancy, Pharaoh made us kill Hank Breton so he could grab the company's ore-hauling contract.
Suddenly, Doleful exclaims,
hey, Roy, Pharaoh's getting away, and Tim's taking out after him. We gotta stop him.
Ooh, wasn't that wonderful the way Roy and Doleful jumped on those men as they galloped under that bluff?
It certainly was.
And the way Roy knocked that bullwhip down and saved Doleful just when Creaky was just about to hit him with that rock.
Oh, that Roy Rogers, he's really some fighter.
Yes. But now that Tim is going to get into trouble again.
Yes.
Just look at him, galloping after a grown-up outlaw all by himself.
Well, we'll find out next week if he gets into any more trouble. And we'll also find out what Roy does about it. Now let's turn over to the very last page of the first section.
All right. Oh, look, there's Flash Gordon.
And we'll read Flash Gordon in just a moment. But first, here's that nice man again with something interesting to say. Now, here we go again with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on the last page of the first section, Flash Gordon.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Rig-a-dig-a-doon-doon, saskamatash. Let's have music for Heroic Flash. Flash Gordon and Dale and their friend Zarkov were in a new rocket ship built for them by the Venusians on their way back to Earth and home. Flash noticed they were running out of fuel, and fearing they couldn't make it to Earth, they decided to land on the moon, hoping to find friends and fuel to continue. As they climb out of their spaceship, they are confronted by an armed tractor. On his receiver set in his space helmet, Flash receives an order in perfect English, obviously the voice of an Earthman.
March toward the lunar base.
Flash, glancing at the cannons which menace him from the space tractor, realizes they have no choice but to obey. So, followed by the tractor, Flash and his friends march toward a strange building which juts out of the earth like a large pumpkin. Last picture, top row, tuned in on the tractor wavelength, Flash hears the driver radio a moon station.
Mark to Dr. Stella. Rocket pilot claims to be Flash Gordon.
And then, surprisingly, Flash hears a woman's voice answer. She warns the man in the tractor to beware and says that Flash Gordon was killed by a comet.
An imposter, huh? All right, we'll watch him.
First picture, bottom row. Flash and his friends are ushered into the strange building that serves as the air base on the moon. The base is an odd sight, part fortress and part science lab. It's crammed with the most advanced star radars, rocket launchers, and nuclear devices. With a wave of his gun, a guard motions Flash into Dr. Stella's office. Flash stops in front of the woman, who apparently is a leader of the fortress. She stares at him searchingly. Then she tells him that she's seen pictures of Gordon, and that since he looks like Flash Gordon, that he could be someone pretending to be Gordon. A space spy, maybe, trying to ferret out the secrets of this outpost of Earth. And then she says, "We'll soon find out." Flash is given a shot of hypno-serum that'll put him to sleep, but enable him to answer any questions that are asked him while he is sleeping. Question after question is asked Flash. And then last picture, while Flash still sleeps, Stella whispers to her aide, "He's really Gordon. As long as he remains here, our secret is in danger. Watch him."
Ooh, now she knows that he really is Flash Gordon.
Yes, now she knows. And because she knows what a dangerous man Flash is, he's even in greater danger.
Well, if she's honest, why doesn't she want him to know what they're doing on the moon there?
Well, apparently the secret she wants to keep from him is not an honest one.
That's just what I was thinking. I wonder what that secret is.
Well, maybe next week we'll find that out. Now let's go to the first page of the second section of Puck the Comic Weekly.
Oh, yes, and here's Dagwood, who does such funny things.
Well, let's see what funny thing he does today. Here we go with Dagwood and Blondie. Ram-a-foo, ram-a-fum, zim-zam-zombie. Conjure me music for Dagwood and Blondie. Blondie is shopping today. She sees a hat in a store window and likes it so much she goes in to try it on. As Blondie admires herself second picture in the new hat, the sales lady says, "It's $7.95.
Oh, it was made for me. I'll take it.
Last picture, top row. Out on the street, Blondie is hit by a thought.
Oh, dear. I forgot about Dagwood. He'll hit the ceiling if I come home with another new hat.
And first picture, second row, Blondie is back in the hat shop again.
Have you a real, real expensive hat?
Well, this exclusive model costs $40. Would you like to try it on?
No, no, I just want to take it home on approval.
Oh, certainly, Mrs. Bumstead.
And that evening, last picture, second row, Blondie comes into the living room where Dagwood is reading a paper. And she's wearing her new hat. She walks in front of Dagwood.
Darling, how do you like my new hat?
Dagwood looks up from his paper.
Well, how much it cost?
First picture, third row, Blondie answers.
$40.
And Dagwood really hits the ceiling.
Outrageous! You think I'm made of money? You think I'm a millionaire?
He drops from the ceiling to his chair. And Blondie says,
"I have another little hat here, dear, for only $7.95.
$7.95?
Mm-hmm.
Last picture, third row, Blondie puts the cheap hat on, the one she wanted in the first place.
Do you like it?
It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It was made for you. By all means, keep it.
Well, all right, dear, if you say so.
First picture, bottom row, Blondie is in the hat shop again.
I'm returning the $40 hat. Thank you for letting me borrow it.
Second picture, bottom row, she's back home again. As she comes in the door, Dagwood says,
"Gee, I love your little hat, dear. You have such good taste."
"Thank you, dear."
And last picture, she looks at herself in the mirror, admiring her pretty little hat. And she says softly to herself,
"It's simple when you know how." Wasn't that a smart trick that Blondie played on Dagwood?
Yes, it certainly was. Taking the expensive hat home and making Dagwood think she had bought it when she hadn't bought it at all.
That was just a trick to make Dagwood happy that she only bought a cheap hat.
Yes. Well, as she says, it's simple when you know how.
Yes.
Well, now it's time for Dick's adventure.
Oh, yes, and I'm anxious to read that.
All right, let's go to the very last page of Puck the Comic Weekly.
And here he is. And you remember that Dick is in the early days of America when the Americans and the British were at war.
Yes, sir. The Americans were led by General Andrew Jackson.
And he had another name because sometimes they called him Old Hickory.
Yes, that was because he was tough. And you see, hickory wood is tough wood.
Yes, and you remember that pirate, Jean Lafitte, that he had offered to help the Americans fight the British.
Yes, but at first General Jackson didn't want to accept Lafitte's help because Jackson didn't like pirates.
And then all of a sudden he changed his mind, didn't he?
Yes, he changed his mind. And he let Lafitte go to get his men.
And then a messenger rode into camp and said that the British were marching to attack the Americans. And I wonder if we'll have a battle today.
Well, let's read now and find out. Here we go with Dick's Adventures. Say the magic words with me. Riggedy pack a zack a zick. That's the music for Adventurous Dick. Last picture, top row. The countryside beyond the colorful old city of New Orleans swarms with defenders. French, Spanish, Creoles, and above all, with Tennesseans like Old Hickory himself. Rough, tough hunters who can bark a squirrel at 100 yards and a redcoat at 150. First picture, second row, Dick stands beside General Jackson, waiting for the first sight of the British army, which is on the march. Dick remembers that the British are 10,000 strong, while Old Hickory's fighters number only 5,000. Then the British regulars in perfect formation, in brilliant red coats, come into sight. Straight toward the field where the battle is to take place, they come. They look for the sight of the American army, but see nothing but trees and bushes and silent breastworks. Then suddenly, last picture, second row, 5,000 American rifles spit hot lead and cold death from hidden places. British ranks are broken, but swiftly they reform. The officers beat their men with swords, forcing them back into rank.
At them, men! At them! Forward there! Forward!
Time and again, the British charge the Americans.
Forward! Forward!
Time and again, they are driven back. And then, finally, the battle is over. The British have been stopped by the hidden, withering fire of Tennessee rifles, and New Orleans is saved. Last picture, through a wildly jubilant city, Dick walks proudly with the reformed pirate Jean Lafitte. No one knows that though the battle for New Orleans has been fought and won, the United States and Great Britain had already signed a treaty of peace in Ghent 2 weeks before. Yes, and one of the reasons they won was because Jean Lafitte, that pirate, had helped the Americans.
Yes, and just think, the Americans only had half as many men as the British.
Yes, but they had a better way of fighting. The plans of Old Hickory and Jean Lafitte were too smart for the British.
Yes, they were. Oh, that was a good story.
Yes, you bet it was. Well, now look underneath Dick's Adventures. There's Rusty Riley.
Oh, yes. And Rusty Riley, you remember that Rusty Riley is with the carnival, and he's with his friend Stovepipe.
Yes, and the carnival is owned by Denver Dooley. And Dooley has hired a couple of new acts to work with his carnival.
Yes, but what Mr. Dooley doesn't know is that two of the people that he has hired are crooks. And one is named Necro. He's a magician. And the other is named Beagle. He's kind of some sort of a fortune teller.
Yes, and Beagle and Necro have tricked Dooley into a card game.
And the crooks are going to cheat and try to win all of Dooley's money. But Rusty knows about this, and he's told Stovepipe about it. And I'll bet you he'll find a way to stop these crooks.
Well, let's read now and see if he does. Here we go with Rusty Riley. Gallop and run till the road is dusty. Give us music for his horse and Rusty. After overhearing the conversation between Necro and Beagle, Rusty finds Stovepipe and leads him back to the tent. As they go, third picture top row, Rusty tells Stovepipe what he heard.
Well, he said Mr. Dooley was a made-to-order sucker, he said. And then he said that nosy kid was fooling with my special specs.
Ah, yes. You no doubt are the nosy kid, Rusty. Tell me, did he mention marked cards?
Last picture talk roll, Rusty exclaims.
Jeepers, yes. How'd you know that? He said, give me those marked cards and scram.
I fear that my long experience in this profession has educated me in the devious ways of many deplorable characters. Let us hurry, my boy.
First picture, bottom row. They cautiously approach Necro's tent. Rusty whispers.
Yeah, this is the place I meant, among these boxes. It's real dark, and you can see in the tent through the back flap.
Yes, we're right in time, my boy. Dooley just came in.
They peek through a crack in the tent.
Hey, look, Mr. Stovepipe. Mr. Necro's wearing those queer purplish glasses I told you about.
A little later, inside the tent, the card game between Necro, who's wearing the purplish glasses, and Dooley goes on. Necro says...
The three kings beat me. It's your pot. Your luck's really running high, Dooley.
Dooley chuckles.
Well, I warned you I couldn't lose tonight. Well, how about it? You want to quit?
Outside the tent, Rusty whispers.
Gee, Wilkins, Mr. Stovepipe, Mr. Dooley is winning.
Shh, quiet, my boy. Wait.
Inside the tent, Necro says...
Well, one more hand, Dooley. Double the amount that's on the table. Then we'll quit. What do you say? Okie doke for me. It's your deal.
Last picture, Stovepipe says...
This is what I was waiting for. Quick, Rusty. Run to the main gate and get the policeman who's stationed there.
Policeman? Okay.
Oh, goody, goody. Stovepipe's going to send Rusty to get a policeman.
Yes. Now if Necro pulls any funny stuff, Stovepipe will have him arrested.
Yes, and if he does, Mr. Dooley will find out that Rusty was really the one who stopped Necro from cheating him. And then Mr. Dooley will see that Rusty's the hero.
Yes, you bet he will. But we'll find that out next week. Now, that's all the time I have. But before I go, here's that nice fellow with some more interesting information. Well, honey and all you boys and girls, I gotta go now, but be sure to meet me and my little friend Miss Honey next week when I read Puck the Comic Weekly. For I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. Don't forget, boys and girls, see you all next week. Your friend, the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man.